This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 39 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. This past Friday, I took one final vacation day before football season, and it was literally the worst possible day to take off. I was on the golf course with my brother and some friends when I got a text from my buddy that said, "What is happening?" I was on the 15th tee box and I responded, "What?" And then I checked my Twitter feed. Ezekiel Elliott suspended for 6 games. Sammy Watkins traded to the Rams. Jordan Matthews traded to the Bills. What was happening? What actually was going on? I won't lie, guys, and this may sound like an excuse for a bad final 4 holes, but my golf game was shattered after that moment. My mind was racing as to why all of this happened and what all of this meant. But now we're days removed from the insanity of that day, and I figured, hey, why not podcast about that as well as some other changes that have gone on within my projections and rankings? Because like I said a few episodes ago, my opinions are going to change. With new information, all of our opinions should change. My goal isn't to be the most stubborn fantasy analyst out there. My goal is to be the most accurate, most logical fantasy analyst out there. So today, we're going to look at a few guys who should be rising and a few more who should be falling in fantasy drafts. But before looking into that, I wanted to send a quick reminder that, as you know, the NFL season is just around the corner and you can catch all the games on TuneIn and the TuneIn app. At home or on the go, listen to the home call of every game live or pop in and out of the action every Sunday with NFL First and Goal. That's TuneIn's audio red zone station. Download the TuneIn app today and listen to the NFL for free for 30 days. TuneIn is your everything audio app. All right, the first guy I want to feature on today's show is a faller, and he's someone I just talked about, Sammy Watkins. Now, let me first say that I understand why the Rams would want Watkins. I understand why they would want to trade for Sammy Watkins. He's a deep ball guy, and they desperately needed someone who could consistently beat corners deep. Over the last 2 years among relevant wide receivers, Watkins has had the 4th and 5th highest air yards per reception rate in all of football. He can make big plays. The problem is that while he's going to help the Rams, his stock definitely took a huge hit in fantasy football by going to LA, because Jared Goff is in LA. Goff finished last season ranked dead last in football in air yards per attempt. He was the worst. I know. Jeff Fisher, a bad offensive line, no receiving weapons. I get it, guys. I'm not here to say that Jared Goff is going to be just as bad in 2017 as he was in 2016. It would almost be impressive if he was, because he was one of the worst rookie quarterbacks when you adjust for era that you could possibly find. The thing is, though, generally speaking, the way quarterbacks perform during their rookie seasons is kind of how they're going to be the rest of their careers. Meaning, if a quarterback is bad to start, probability tells us that quarterback just might not be very good. There are plenty of examples of this, and the only guys who have really bucked that trend include Alex Smith, Drew Brees, maybe Eli Manning, and Derek Carr. That's it in recent memory. And even if Jared Goff makes strides, we shouldn't simply bank on him making legitimate ones in year 2. Progression is nice and it should happen, but to assume that he's going to be this viable starter given the offensive line and coaching changes is a bit premature. Because of, again, probability. Goff can improve, but selling this as a lateral move for Sammy would not be right. He's going from one of the more run-heavy teams in football to another one that should be fairly run-heavy, so his overall volume won't change dramatically. It didn't in my model either. But Watkins' touchdown upside has dramatically fallen. To me, I'm just not even sure that you can trust him as a wide receiver 2 in a normal league, whereas I had him as a fringe wide receiver 1 before this deal went down. Maybe Jared Goff will shock me and become somewhat of an outlier based on a big year 2. But let's not ignore the other side of this equation. What if Jared Goff is actually really bad? What if he barely improves over last year? Because Jared Goff last year would be a complete disaster for Sammy Watkins. As much as it pains me to say this, Rob Kelly is rising up my rankings and projections. To anyone who's listened to this podcast all offseason, you know my stance on Rob Kelly. If you're new, my stance is that he's a dad running back who couldn't even start at Tulane, fell into a starting gig last season because Washington really values running backs who don't fumble, and he doesn't have much of a ceiling because he's not a pass catcher. So I was far more into Samaje Perine than I was Rob Kelly a month ago. It's not that P. Ryan is someone who I was into as a prospect, but he at least had more ambiguity surrounding him, so his upside was a lot more interesting. Well, like I said, Washington clearly cares about ball security. All teams do, but some do more than others. Not only did Kelly get the start in the team's first preseason game, but Samaje Perine not only dropped a pass, but he fumbled the ball too. We know that a huge driving force in running back viability in fantasy football is how coaches deal out volume, or who coaches decide should be on the field. Right now, despite having a below average season after seeing his yards per carry drop down the stretch, Rob Kelly is the early down guy in Washington. Do I think he'll keep the gig all season long? No, I still don't. But P. Ryan's slow start should have this kind of impact. Rob Kelly should rise on draft boards. And like I said before, I'm not trying to be a stubborn analyst. I want to win fantasy football championships. Someone else who's fallen in my rankings and projections is Eddie Lacy. And that too is a tough pill to swallow because I did see a ton of upside in Lacy as a middle round pick in fantasy football not long ago. Thomas Rawls has been seeing first team reps in Seattle, and he started the first preseason game for the Seahawks. It appears that he has the early edge for that early down back gig. But I'm still not totally sold that Rawls is going to be it for Seattle this year. We know his rookie year was strong and efficient, but he followed it up last season with the second lowest success rate, or the percentage of positive expected points runs, according to NumberFire's net expected points model, among all 100 plus attempt runners since 2000. That's 768 instances, and Thomas Rawls' 2016 season was basically the second worst. Some of that could be health related, but that's also a reason to not like Thomas Rawls. He's failed to stay healthy so far in his career. And then there's Lacy and the fact that he's making the 16th most money in the league at the running back position. Seattle went out and signed him this offseason, which to me, and if you listened to the Adam Schefter episode a couple of weeks ago, he alluded to this, says that they do want Lacy to be something, or that they once thought he could be something. Because really, he's kind of a redundant asset in that backfield when you compare him to Thomas Rawls. They're early down bruisers who might not see a ton of receptions, especially with CJ Procise there. I'm still of the belief that Seattle will give Eddie Lacy more touches than Thomas Rawls, but it would be ridiculous for me to not change my tone a bit when it comes to Eddie Lacy. He's fallen, and he could end up being more touchdown dependent than I even hoped. But if someone grabs hold of that Seahawks gig, that could actually be pretty big. Because when a Seahawks running back saw 60% or more of the team's snaps last year, they posted an RB1 performance at basically the same rate as Devontae Freeman last year. I've mentioned that Dalvin Cook is becoming more and more intriguing, and that's why I wanted to talk to him on here on today's podcast. In his first action, he not only got the start for Minnesota, but he ran the ball 5 times and he also caught 4 of 4 targets through the air. That's key. That's a really big deal. Reports are saying that Cook has impressed as a receiver in camp, which could go a long way, especially if the Vikings' offensive line doesn't improve over last year. There could be more dump-offs. And the Vikings, despite having backups starting for them last year, rest in peace, Jerick McKinnon, they caught the 13th most passes out of the backfield as a team in 2016. That's why I'm really into him. This is a win-win scenario. If he does indeed capture the passing down work there, then he'll have more of a ceiling than maybe we initially thought. But on top of this, if there aren't as many dump-offs because the offensive line improves, then we're looking at a better offensive line for him to run behind. And Sam Bradford, who finished with the 6th lowest air yards per attempt rate last season, may have more time to throw the ball deep. That would also be huge because he was 6th best in completion percentage last year on balls that traveled 15 or more yards through the air. More completed passes down the field means more scoring opportunities for Dalvin Cook. Latavius Murray's injury has aided in a lot of this, I think. He's back, but he missed the first part of camp, allowing Cook to shine a bit. And we know Murray is just kind of a guy. So while coaches may want to give him some love this season, it's tough to envision a scenario where they're not using Cook more. I'm really, really intrigued by this situation. I truly think that Dalvin Cook could be valued close to where Joe Mixon and potentially even Leonard Fournette are going in fantasy drafts. Mike Gillisley is another running back who's dropping. I was and still am interested in him in that Patriots offense. It's a team that we know is going to score points, and it's a team that had a running back who led the league in goal line carries last year. LeGarrette Blount's 29 carries within the 5-yard line were actually tied for the most that we've seen over the last half decade. And I do think that we oversell the whole Belichick rotates his running backs thing. In 3 of the last 5 seasons, the Patriots have effectively had a workhorse back. Blount missed time in 2015, but was pacing to a 57% market share in that backfield. and Stephen Ridley saw a 55% market share with them in 2012. Then there's the fact that Mike Gillisley is the only running back in NumberFire's database to have a 0.30 rushing NEP per rush with a 57% success rate. He was unreal last season from an efficiency standpoint. But now I'm a little scared, especially as his ADP has soared to the fourth round. He's been sidelined with a hamstring injury, and there was a report last week from the Providence Journal saying that Rex Burkhead, not Mike Gillisley, is on track to take on the LeGarrette Blount role. So given that hammy injury that Gillisley's got and where he's going in drafts, as much as I can see the upside, I'm very nervous right now. Things could easily change in a week, but right now, I think staying away from Gillisley in drafts does make sense. Guys, Kenny Golladay, or should I say Babytron, he's kind of happening. He scored a pair of touchdowns in the Lions preseason opener, and there have only been glowing reports coming out of Detroit's camp about Babytron. And I do think that he could easily be the top scoring rookie wide receiver in fantasy football this year. While the Lions may want to throw more two tight end sets out there this season, only three teams ran more three wide sets a season ago than Detroit did. So if Golladay gets the third wide receiver job, he'll be on the field. And I envision that happening. The Lions can move Golden Tate to his more natural slot position, play Marvin Jones as the flanker, and Golladay would be the X. It actually makes a ton of sense. That means Golladay could see a decent amount of volume right away in this offense. And if his red zone ability continues, he could also steal a lot of touchdowns in this Lions offense. And as you guys know, I've been loving on him this offseason, and he's the third best wide receiver prospect in my prospect model, so I'm all about him. I still like him more as a dynasty asset, but he could make a real year one impact, and I am so ready for it. The last thing I wanted to do on today's show is talk about the biggest news that went down last week, and that's Ezekiel Elliott's 6-game suspension. I've already gotten about 4 emails from people asking how they should treat him and where they should draft him, so instead of waiting until the mailbag episode to drop some numbers and where I'm at with him, I figured I'd do that here today. The number one thing that'll go overlooked with something like this and when something like this happens is what I've talked about a lot before, which is that anytime you have a player just chilling on your bench, doing absolutely nothing, there's still a cost associated with that. It's like inventory at a manufacturing plant. That's costly. What it does is that it doesn't allow you to use that roster spot for a hot waiver wire commodity or a breakout player. You're playing with one fewer bench player for 6 weeks, and in really that's 7 because Dallas is a bye in week 6, and that's a huge disadvantage, especially in leagues with shallower benches. That's important with this too. I did my home league draft this past weekend, for instance, and we only have 5 bench spots in that league. That makes Zeke a little less attractive as a result. If you had, say, 14 bench spots, then sure, you can take on the burden a little bit easier. But how should you really value him? That's the question everyone is asking. And I'll be real with you guys, it's a very, very difficult question to answer. Intuitively, though, I have a very hard time spending any sort of early round pick on a player who's going to miss more than half of a fantasy football regular season. I want to try to think about this mathematically, though. Let's just assume that Zeke performs as he did last season. In 2016, he had 14 top 24 PPR performances out of the 15 relevant fantasy football games. I'm removing week 17 here because it's a worthless week in fantasy football. That's a rate of 93.33%. When it comes to top 18 performances, he was at 87%, and top 12 performances, he was at 73%. Now, it's not as though you're taking a zero from the running back spot when Ezekiel Elliott is out, but you're certainly not going to get that type of production. You're not going to get Zeke-type production when Zeke is not playing. The average lower-end starter last year basically saw less than half of what Zeke saw in terms of weekly performances. So while Zeke had 14 top 24 performances, a replacement-level guy, not a waiver wire one, but someone you might get in the 5th or the 6th round, saw 6 or 7. Zeke had 14. Top 18 performances, you're looking at 4 or 5, Zeke had 13. And then top 12 ones, while Zeke had 11, a replacement-level back had 3 or 4. So let's cut Zeke's numbers in half and then add in what we would expect from a replacement level guy for half the season. In other words, divide all the numbers I just walked through in half. That means you'd get 7 top 24 performances from Zeke and 2 or 3 from a replacement level player. Meaning Zeke plus a player would give you, say, 10 top 24 performances. Top 18 performance wise, you'd be looking at 8. And top 12, about 6. So we've got 10 top 24 performances from this Frankenstein back, 8 top 18s, and 6 top 12 ones. That's not a bad running back performance at all. Only 10 running backs hit that top 24 mark last year, 9 hit the top 18 mark, and 7 hit the top 12 one. This, to me, though, is your best outcome. And this tells you that you most definitely should be ranking Zeke outside, at least, at the very least, the top 10 running backs at the position. But you've got to move that even further down because of what I said earlier and the cost of holding on to an asset. That movement becomes more subjective and it comes down to a lot of factors like bench size. But that places Zeke more in the mid RB2 range then. And then on top of this, we're not factoring in the Cowboys' offensive line downgrades and that Zeke may not perform as well as he did last season. Basically, what I'm saying is that I think I'm probably going to be priced out of Ezekiel Elliott's ADP. And in scenarios like this, I think you have to play the market. Because there really are so many question marks around whether or not he'll actually serve the 6 games, what type of league you're in, and so on. My take right now, though, is that I probably won't be owning any Elliott shares this year. That may come and bite me in the butt later in the season, but given the exercise I just walked through, I do think that it's the most logical way to approach the situation. Unless his ADP falls to a place where the reward truly outweighs the risk, I will not own Zeke. Now that that's out of the way, I'll probably avoid Elliott questions on this week's mailbag episode, which will drop on Friday. So if you sent me questions about him, hopefully that satisfies them at least a bit. As always, please do me a favor and subscribe to this show by going to iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, SoundCloud, basically anywhere podcasts can be found. And don't forget, there's a contest for a NumberFire premium subscription that is still going on. All I need you to do is go to iTunes and leave a review. Then you'll automatically be placed in a drawing for one of 2 NumberFire premium subscriptions that'll be handed out before the football regular season starts. Otherwise, thanks for listening, everyone, and I will be back in your ears on Friday with a mailbag episode.